You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father. For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic. Before the Dark Times.
Protocol 66 must not be discovered by the Jedi.
Yes, Lord Tyrannus.
You must face the gravest of journeys tomorrow, Bond.
The ancient homeworld of the Sith.
Hello, this is Obi-Wan Kenobi and Master Plo Koon, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. Yes, this is the podcast you're looking for, most definitely, Obi-Wan.
The name's Rex, but you'll call me Captain or Sir. You're listening to A Cup of the Clone Wars.
This is Tom Kane, the voice of Yoda in Star Wars The Clone Wars, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to A Cup of Clone Wars, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars The Clone Wars through a critical lens. On this special show, we talk with Star Wars icon Tom Kane, voice of Jedi Master Yoda, Admiral Yularen, and the opening narrator in Star Wars The Clone Wars, as well as the Yoda Chronicles. His voice acting resume is simply incredible, as he has appeared in countless animation, television, film, and video games, and can also be heard as a live announcer for the Oscars. It is a real honor and a treat to speak with Tom Kane. Welcome, Tom.
Well, happy to be here. Or rather, should I say, greetings I send you. Happy Life Day preparations you are making, yes?
You bet.
That was great.
That was good. Yeah, yes, we are certainly preparing for the season, and actually we just changed our logo to say Christmas with Kenobi just for the month. So that was perfect.
Oh, perfect.
Yes. So as everyone here who's listening obviously knows, you are no stranger to Star Wars, and as we were coming up with questions, we thought it would be interesting for you to kind of tell us the moment you first realized that you could perform as Yoda.
Well, you know, it wasn't, it was probably the same as everybody else that, you know, was alive and saw it in the theaters when it came out. Everyone was trying to do everything, right? You know, everybody, you know, I was 15 years old and I had already, that same summer, I'd actually gotten hired for the first few jobs to do voiceover work locally. And I knew I could do character voices because that's what I was running around the grocery store aisles doing all the time, embarrassing my sister and mother. But yeah, I like everybody else, that we were all trying to, you know, holding our hands over our mouths and going, "Your thoughts betray you, young Skywalker," you know, doing a little bit of everything and trying to do Yoda. And I didn't think mine was terribly much better than a number I heard. And it was just something I would hear in my head when I would see a Star Wars clip or a little riff of the music, I'd have two or three things that went through my mind, you know, scenes or voices of Darth Vader. And in that respect, I was just the same as every other teenager at that summer. And it kind of went along that way for years, like everybody else. It became part of my life. You know, Star Wars was, you know, the moment where movies changed for me. And it just worked out because of the weird path my, you know, career took and my life took, that I found myself one day auditioning for some character voices for a video game called The Dig, which was the very first property LucasArts. I didn't even think it was called LucasArts yet at that point, but it was their first effort at making a computer game, you know, back when floppy disks were the size of iPads.
Oh, sure.
I'm actually going to relocate to a better part of the house here.
Okay. It's already getting much better.
The first project, it was called The Dig, and it was not a Star Wars property, because George wanted to, you know, make sure that the first game that they tried their hand at, if it was a bomb, wasn't Star Wars. You know, they wanted to tarnish the image. So, but the game went off fine, and it got great reviews at the time, what little fledgling reviews there were. And then they started doing Star Wars titles. And because I was just part of the crew that started the whole thing, they started using me for just miscellaneous voices, you know, TIE Fighter Pilot Number 3 or Imperial Officer Number 4. And
I love TIE Fighter Pilot Number 3.
Well, yeah, he was my favorite. He's the one that went, and then blew up. But but the thing was, is that, you know, there really was no, you know, there was very, it was really haphazard, you know, at the very beginning. They were kind of just throwing things together, and whatever George said, yeah, that works, do that or don't do that. And they started needing voices from the movies. Well, most of the characters were all in England. And the technology didn't exist back then to do just what we're doing right now. I mean, you couldn't talk to somebody in another country without going through AT&T, and it was a phone call and it sounded like crud. So, you know, much less trying to do a session. I mean, now I've got a studio upstairs where I can talk live, and they can record me at Lucasfilm up at the ranch, or they can. I do stuff for Disney Asia. In Singapore, and that's live. It sounds as though I'm in the studio there in Singapore.
Wow.
So none of that existed back then, though. If you wanted to record an original, you know, let's say Peter Cushing, if you needed a Tarkin line, you had to go have someone arrange for a studio in London, record 10 lines with Peter Cushing, and then FedEx a tape, you know, across the pond.
Right.
So it was just not economical to do that. So they started hiring those of us in LA that could do British accents and do some of the characters. Then they knew that I was a good mimic, and so I started doing Tarkin, and then I started doing Akbar. You know, whether you're a prophet of the target, a military target, the name of the system. You know, and I started doing a bunch of different ones. I mean, I was Akbar. I've been doing Akbar for 20 years. You know, it's a trap. The foolish moon of Endor will be, you know. So there's, you know, there's a bunch of people in LA that do these kind of things, but I just was lucky enough that I did them fairly well, and the director, whose name was Dara O'Farrell, a nice Irish lad, he liked me and we got along, and so he just started calling me up every time and say, hey, can you do this or can you do that? And so I started getting a lot of Star Wars stuff, and one day I was just goofing around doing exactly what you were talking about, you know, with people trying to do the voices. Well, it was no different than me seeing a movie, but I was in a studio and I was seeing lines that said Yoda. And it's a 3C-3PO. Well, I actually started goofing around with, I was doing C-3PO. And he goes, Dar goes, can you read that again? And I said, well, why? And he goes, oh, no, just read a few of those lines again. You know, so I just said, hello, I'm C-3PO, human-cyborg relation, you know.
Wow.
And it turned out that they needed just a few lines. Anthony wasn't going to do it for whatever reason. And they played it for George, and he said, yeah, he sounds great. Use him. So from that moment on, I was 3PO for most of the games that Lucasfilm has ever made. And then a few months later, the same thing happened with Yoda. I was just goofing around reading some of the Yoda lines. And Darren didn't even tell me what he's doing. He was recording what I was doing without me even knowing it. Took it up and played it for George, and George literally said something along the line. Dar said, he said, yeah, he's good, so you use him. And that was almost 20 years ago. So, you know, when various projects would come up, they would ask Frank Oz, you know, as they still do. I mean, they always offer something to Frank.
Well, sure.
As they do to James Earl Jones, and some things they'll do and some things they won't. Partly because of their schedules and partly because they're just not interested in whatever it is, because they're, you know, they're gentlemen getting up there in age, and they've got grandkids and other things that, you know, doing three lines in a video game doesn't mean anything to them anymore. So,
sure.
But hard to imagine that's true of anybody. But I came into the studio a week later, and I saw the script in front of me with all the Yoda lines highlighted, and I'm like, oh gosh, I got the wrong script. Like, this must be Frank's. And they said, no, it's you. You're Yoda now. I went, what? And a few minutes later when I came to.
No kidding. Was there a ceremony? Did you have to get down on one knee?
No, nothing like that. But I, and that was, like I said, 18 years ago. So I can't even count the number of Yoda projects I've done. I'm all over Disneyland and Disney World and all the games and the toys, a lot of TV commercials. So it just... It's been an amazing pile of work. So,
were you the voice on the Magic Band, the limited edition Yoda Magic Band?
I don't know what that is. What is the Magic Band?
It's the things when you get into Disney World. It's your theme park ticket. You can use it for fast passes.
Yeah, as far as I know, that's me. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
No, that's me, and I'm in the Jedi Training Academy and Star Tours and all over the place. I'm also Akbar in that as well.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be darned. Small world. I guess that's a
So, Tom, getting involved with all this stuff, we recognize Darth Vader as kind of one of the biggest Star Wars icons, but I would say, second to that is definitely Yoda. He's definitely one of those guys. And with the last... a few years, Clone Wars has really been a big part of that as far as the franchise. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with the Clone Wars TV episodes and the saga there.
Well, I'm the only person, as far as I know, that didn't have to audition for either of the Clone Wars, both the 2D miniseries that was on Cartoon Network and then the second Clone Wars CGI series. Because I had already done so much stuff as Yoda... apparently George just was like, well, yeah, just keep using him. Cause obviously George had picked me to be the backup voice for Frank Oz years before. So there was no reason to assume he wanted to change his mind, and he didn't. He just was like, no, he's fine. Keep using him. So I didn't audition for any of that. I was just sort of surprised to find out I just got a call and got booked. Hmm. And then when the second Clone War series came up, the one that just most recent one, it was kind of the same thing with me and James Arnold Taylor both. Neither of us auditioned for Obi-Wan or Yoda because, again, George had already picked us as being the voices he liked for the backups. So, they auditioned for everybody else, but James and I just sort of showed up when we got – they just booked us. The only thing that was different, though, is they wanted me to come in to read for the other characters. Because under the Screen Actors Guild contracts, they can use the same person for up to three characters in an episode, and you don't have to pay them more.
Oh.
So just from an economical point of view, they wanted to make sure they had actors that could do other characters, So, and of course, James and I were able to trot out, like most voiceover people can. We do a number of different voices. And the one apparently I nailed just right off the bat, Dave told me later, was George like heard it and was like, okay, that's done, it's him, was the opening narrator. Because that's like the voice from the guy from the old Superman series or the, right. The Lone Ranger, join with us of those thrilling days of yesterday with the Lone Ranger, that sort of thing. And George wanted that because, and again, it's so funny. It's so many times everyone got, so many fans really like to rip George and think, they think he doesn't know what he's doing. And in retrospect, it wasn't so bad. I mean, when the first few episodes of Clone Wars came out and they had the voice at the beginning and instead of the crawl, I got so many people complaining about it. But once people got wrapped their brain around it for a television series, it was perfect. It's because, you're trying to get kids that can't read that well, and it summarizes in just 6 seconds or 10 seconds what's going on, what happened beforehand, and what to expect. And if you tried to do that with a crawl, it would take an 8-year-old 2 minutes to read it.
Right.
So, again, it for a movie, no, probably wasn't a good thing. But for a TV series, it was a great idea.
Well, it's serialized, and I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for all the fans, of course, just myself, but I miss the opening narration in Rebels.
I must say I do too. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. Originally, that was one thing we did propose. Sure. That is one thing that was pitched. I actually did a number of opening narrator things to approach the folks at Disney and George and stuff with. And, you know, for mainly just to make sure it was distinctly different than Clone Wars. That was one of the things they did to make sure it was its own thing, because they didn't want it to look like just an extension of Clone Wars.
Sure.
So.
Well, and you mentioned, of course, if there was a Mount Rushmore of Star Wars, I think two of the names you mentioned a few times, George Lucas and Dave Filoni, would certainly be on there. Yeah. How would you compare their two styles of directing and just the way? I mean, clearly they both are the Star Wars visionaries, but how would you compare them as directors?
Well, I really can't speak to George because
how about his creators?
I worked for George so peripherally through other people, but what I can tell you is that he's a very thoughtful guy. He's not a man of many words. He just says, do that, or do this, or once try this. And, you know, he's not a real demonstrative director. And Dave is very much in that same vein. One of the things Dave said in the very beginning was, the reason I picked you guys to the entire cast was because I heard something that was there. It was already there. And I want you to, you know, whatever you did that I liked and I picked you from your audition, that's why you're here. So your job is not to go off and do some wild, crazy stuff now to impress me. Your job is to give me what I want and reinforce what I liked. And Dave was a wonderful director because he was a man of very few words. He would love to, I mean, we usually spent more time just talking about stuff, Star Wars stuff and things that were going on and stuff with, you know, what Seth Green was up to or whatever. You know, we spent more time doing that sometimes than actually recording Yoda because, you know, half the time Yoda was only had five lines.
Right.
And the narrator, you know, I usually did in two takes. So our recording sessions, you know, they might have lasted 20 minutes at most, and 15 of those were us just talking, you know. So, you know, he was a wonderful director because he knew what he wanted. He let you try to, he never gave you any direction at first. He just let you read the line. And if it was great, he got another take and we moved on. If it wasn't exactly what he wanted, then he'd say, nah, you know, I'm thinking more like this or more like that. And he'd describe what it was. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, the light bulb would go off and you go, oh, yeah, I get it. Because he was really good at, he has an encyclopedic knowledge of all the properties. I mean, he wasn't so much an expanded universe guy, but he, in terms of the films and just the backstories and stuff, Dave Filoni knows as much about that as anyone alive, I think. And so it was really great because he'd be able to say, remember in Empire when Yoda did this and you felt like that's what I'm going for. And immediately you go, oh, okay, I get it. And then you'd say, you know, read the line with kind of that feel, and he'd be like, bingo, you know, we're done.
That's cool. It's just neat as fans, of course, to sort of hear the behind the scenes because it's I'm sure many of us to be a fly on the wall for those conversations would really be wonderful. And I think particularly with you, because you spent so much time with Yoda and in his head and as an incredible actor. So who really is Yoda to you, and what is it about him that you find so appealing?
Well, he's a lot of things sort of rolled into one. I mean, one of the things that everyone comes up with, which is obvious, is he kind of is a bit of he's the shaman, he's the rabbi, he's the priest, he's the, you know, whatever you want to call it. He's kind of the, you know, just because of his age alone and the fact that he's been a Jedi for centuries, he's obviously been very important in not just his own doings in the Force, but he's been critical in guiding the Jedi Order from its childhood. I mean, I don't think it's ever been challenged. He's the oldest living Jedi anywhere. And, you know, so to have that kind of character, I mean, that's why he's always given the deference he's given. I mean, you know, the Jedi don't have any real pecking order, per se. They don't have titles. You know, there's no Grand Moff Jedi. But it's just unspoken. I mean, they give Yoda the deference that he deserves, and they listen to him, and they take his advice as he gives it because they know that he is stronger in the Force than any of they are or probably ever will be. So in that respect, he's the Grand the grand master of the carnival. You know, he's the guy that everyone else can have a little bit of an opinion, but then they all finally turn to him and go, "What do you think?" And usually, what he says strikes them, you know, a note of truth. So he's the Pope. He's the you know, I don't know, pick the head of every religion. He's that guy.
That's a good point to make there. You know, and we've talked about that numerous times where he's that shaman. He's that voice in your ear. And what kind of aspects of religion, you spoke a little bit about this, and mythology, do you see in Yoda and some of his teachings he duels out?
Well, there's you know, the most basic thing, and the thing that perhaps is the most important, is that, you know, there's a darkness and there's a light. You know, there's a good and a bad. There's, you know, to pull an element from George's youth, that which is really what Star Wars is, there are the cowboys and the black hats and the bad guys and the black hats.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, you know, he's just, you know, an embodiment of all that is, tries to be good, sometimes fails, obviously, but at least attempts to make the universe a better place.
Very much so. And you mentioned like his successes and his failures. And of course, we're going to focus a little bit on season 6 now of The Clone Wars, which is so powerful. And I'm sure you were excited when you saw that there was a huge Yoda arc. So how would you say that he has grown as a character throughout the saga, especially in the last arc of season 6?
Well, the cool thing about the Yoda arc is that it really allowed the audience and to see Yoda and me to portray Yoda as something that no one had ever seen. And that's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a brilliant idea because it humanized him, you know, made you realize that even though he's pushing 1,000 years old and might be the wisest, most powerful Jedi in history, he's still a fallible being. So
which makes him relatable.
Oh yeah. That's what I said. It humanizes him. It's like, well, if Yoda could not see some of the signs of what's coming, or was blinded to them for whatever reason, or just was fooled by the dark side, or whatever the circumstances were, well, then, you know, we can be forgiven for being the same.
was it an interesting, and I know you've been asked this before, but it's worth mentioning again, how much did you enjoy playing the dark version of Yoda?
Oh, well, that was weird. I mean, it was fun. It was great fun as a performer. But it was weird because Dave and I, we sat and talked about it for a long time. We were going, oh, this is completely uncharted territory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were, you know, there's some lines where we would purposefully harken back to a line that had been spoken in one of the movies and give it a similar feel or whatever, just to make it more credible. But here was an area where neither of us, and Dave, you know, Dave is someone who's always opinionated about Yoda. I mean, I think it's probably his favorite character next to Plo Koon, but and is George's favorite character, I'm told. But
oh wow!
But here's Yoda, that is not Plo Koon.
Sure.
But here was a situation where nobody had any experience with coming up with dialogue or anything for the situation. So, you know, we did have to kind of dance around it. I gave him a few line readings and a few different approaches, and we finally settled on, you know, what it became. And we were trying, the thing that was so silly is that we were trying really hard because what we realized based on the drawings and the sketches and the lighting design and the darkness and all the stuff that was going on and just the physicality of Yoda, his size and the way that the evil Yoda carried himself, we were really worried it was going to come across as Gollum.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So we were trying really hard to make sure that there was nothing, you know, precious, you know, sort of thing going on. So I think we did okay on that. But I've had a couple of people, yeah, it was kind of like a Gollum as a Jedi, or Sith rather. So.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the easy response. But yeah, I wondered about that as well. How much that kind of played into it, and how much that, I mean, I'm sure subconsciously it influences things, but ultimately, it was strong and it spoke on its own accord.
I think so. And again, the fans, the reaction I've gotten from it is 99.9% positive. So apparently it worked.
Oh, it was great. And just seeing that image of them facing each other, it's one of the first images we saw of season six, was breathtaking.
Yeah. No, it was cool. I mean, even as a fan, I mean, it is a weird disconnect that those of us that work on Star Wars that are diehard fans, we all talk about, is that while we're actually in the booth and we're recording it, it's a job that we're doing and we're trying to get the lines right and whatever, but it doesn't really kind of settle in until after you're done.
Right.
And once you've finished, there's this bit of, okay, I'll talk to you next week. And then you have a sort of, okay, what did I just do? You know, is that, you know, how did, you know, James Arnold Chandler the same way. How did this kid from wherever he's from end up, you know, doing this? And I'm the same way. How did a kid from Kansas end up doing Yoda? And so we all have that feeling. But the really cool thing is because it takes about 9 months to go from, you know, storyboard to finished product, we forget to a great extent what sure. we did. And it's really wonderful because I'm quite purposefully, I stopped reading most of the scripts. They would send me the entire script and I would purposefully do a search because they sent them to me electronically and they were coded and all this stuff. So you could only open them for a certain period of time or something. It was really cool. Had a big watermark all across every page, Tom Kane. So if they suddenly appeared on eBay, I'd be in trouble. But, but one of the things that was cool was that I really started trying to not read any more around my scenes than necessary to understand what was going on. And Dave would fill in the gaps because I wanted to watch them as a fan. I wanted to completely forget about what we had done 6 months, 9 months before. So I could sit there with my kids, my two little ones, who were seeing this for the first time. And then I was seeing it for the first time. And so for me, when I first saw the Yoda arc, I was sort of just as, you know, smacked in the face as everyone else. It was like, wow, this came out really good. So, you know, I'm not saying that from an egotistical point of view. I'm just saying from a fan. I was sitting there watching this going, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah, Dan and I can certainly relate. We certainly watch each of the episodes. And now with the Rebels series with our kids and they are just as shocked and excited as we are. So we can certainly relate with that.
That's wonderful.
Now, you know, speaking with Yoda, you talked about some of the season six and what he learned on Moriban. It seemed to not necessarily influence his decisions so much in the film Revenge of the Sith. So do you think that Yoda should have been more or less proactive in the prequel trilogy?
Well, again, we're dealing with a situation where what we came up with and what they came up with more than me in Clone Wars had never been dreamt of when we did the trilogy. So, you know, if you stand back and look upon the whole thing as a linear timeline, then yeah, it's really easy to go and say, well, yeah, Yoda should have done X, Y, and Z. He should have been more of this or less of this and done whatever, so that he might have headed off some of the disaster and whatever. But that's the fantasy part of what we're discussing. The reality is these things were done out of order. So there's no way you can really say, well, you know, should Yoda have done more of this or that? Well, yeah, he should have, if only they had shot everything, you know, in the order that they happened, you know, timeline-wise.
Right.
So that's go ahead. I was going to say that's got to be the great challenge as a creative unit when you've already got a well-established film and film franchise that, and then you're fitting something sort of in the gaps, filling in with this amazing canvas of the Clone Wars. So it's interesting to see Yoda's evolution, and it shows that he's relatable because he learns a lot of incredible things in the Moriban arc, and then he sort of goes back and forth. I think that's as much a sign of the Emperor's influence as anything.
Well, they, you know, and from a sheer production point of view, they had a big decision to make. I mean, George, I know, ticked off a lot of fans when he decided that whole swaths of the universe were not canon.
Right.
He just sort of erased all of the stuff. But that is something they, at a very fundamental level, had to think about. They're like, okay, we're going to come do Star Wars. Are we going to start over? Is it going to be a reboot? is this going to be a continuation? I mean, because, you know, Abrams, obviously, the reboot he did, you know, he did with, you know, Star Trek, with the exception of Leonard Nimoy as old Spock, you know, he started from scratch.
Sure.
And quite fantastically, in my opinion. I'm a Star Trek fan as well, and I sat there with a lump in my throat, you know. So.
Oh, yes.
So, but, you know, they had to make that decision. Is this going to be something that we have to try to work into the timeline, or are we going to ignore it completely and say this is a reboot? Well, obviously, they're going with the timeline, you know, thing. So there's a lot of things that you can look at because of that and going, well, Yoda should have done this, or the Emperor could have done this. And like, well, that, yeah, but the reality is those were shot 20 years ago, and this is today. So we have to deal with what we were given. So.
Right. It's certainly a trick and a challenge, especially when you have a rabid fan base like we all are. And it's really neat too, for me personally, that hearing that how much you enjoy your work professionally and just as a fan too. And that you see that more and more. We've been very blessed to interview a lot of your friends from the Clone Wars, and they also have the same response as do the actors from Rebels. They just love what they do, and they still enjoy Star Wars too.
Well, there've been a couple couple actors that have come in and out of the show that were quite frankly going, well, I don't know about this whole Star Wars thing. I never really got into it. But I think literally you count them on two fingers, you know, three fingers. But everyone else is just sort of sitting there, just gobsmacked that we're being allowed to play in this universe. So,
right.
You know, so it's something you'll find that does cry. And again, this is why I think so much of what's happening now is going to make people just explode with joy. J.J. Abrams is as big a Star Wars nerd as you will find. Dave Filoni is as big a Star Wars geek as you will find. So you've got all the people that are taking the reins, you know, from the older generation and are continuing it on, who have a greater love for this project than anyone else.
Very, very much so. And we'll just take a quick time out and ask you, what was your opinion and your thoughts on the trailer?
honestly, just that shot of the Falcon doing the barrel roll and going on was worth the whole thing.
Oh, you know, yes.
It's like everyone else is like, yes. So, yeah, that alone was awesome. So, I mean, but yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, they really are trying to cobble something together out of a very, very minimal amount of stuff that they finished.
Sure.
But yeah, I thought it was terrific. I mean, you know, on
the internet exploded and they didn't need Kim Kardashian to do that.
I mean, that amazing. What do you know?
Yeah.
Who imagined you could have something other than a Photoshop behind and get some notice.
Exactly. Yeah. It certainly took everyone's breath away. So it was really, really fun to experience.
Imagine what the next one's going to be like when they get a little more finished. So.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. Well, like you, I think they said on Good Morning America there was, 35 to 60 seconds of actual footage, which, you know, I mean, many studios wouldn't release something this early anyway, so it was just a very nice homage to the fans, I thought.
Yeah. Well, and JJ's been doing that all along. He's been a little bits and pieces, just... Not even so much. He's not teasing. That's the thing I like about what he's doing. He's not trying to tease us. He's trying to get us excited.
Yeah, whet the appetite.
Yeah.
Very much. Oh, yeah, he knows what he's doing. As you mentioned, the Star Trek films, I thought those were marvelous, which made me so happy that he was taking Star Wars on.
Well, you know, I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know for a fact, but I was told this is what he asked in the beginning. He went to George and said, I'd like to do... you know, X, Y, and Z, and George said, no, the story's over with. Vader's story's done. And that's why he went and did Star Trek. It was because he was told no for Star Wars. So, you know, his first love, his first intention was to do Star Wars. And so now he's getting to do it the way he wanted to. So I think we'll all be very happy.
Exactly.
Amen to that.
Now, Dan and I have spoken a little bit about the new upcoming Star Wars and how we're going to kind of show it to our kids. And I'm curious to know, you have children of your own. How do you plan to show them the trilogy or the series itself?
That is a very relevant discussion we're having in our house, because my older set of kids, are all in their 20s and mid-20s. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I lost our minds and adopted two little ones a few years ago.
Good for you.
Yeah. So we now have 2 5-year-old boys.
Wonderful.
And so this is something we've actually had to discuss. It's like, okay, they're old enough now to start watching the Star Wars movies and understand it. Because they're, you know, they've been, from the day they were born, they've been swamped with this stuff. I mean, these. There was a moment at a convention that I would give my left leg to have a video of where my boys were dressed as stormtroopers. They were 3 years old, and they were walking down an aisle and came face to face with Walter Koenig, Chekhov of Star Trek.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
And he sat there and just was smiling at him, and then he started doing like a little dance, and they started mimicking him. And for about a minute, I'm sitting there watching, and there's a crowd. Suddenly there's a crowd of 100 people just stone still watching Chekhov from Star Trek do sort of little improvised, you know, breakdancing with 2 3-year-old black boys in stormtrooper uniforms. It was absolutely amazing.
That's wonderful.
So they've, you know, they know all about this stuff, but we haven't watched the movies with them because I want them to be able to actually sort of remember them. So we're, you know, obviously we're going to take them to see them one of the theaters. So I'm going to try to wangle a pass into the premiere, we'll see.
There you go.
But, absolutely.
But we'll, we need to start. And it's the same debate. It's like, do we watch them in the order that we grew up watching them, or do we watch them, you know, chronologically? So I don't know. We haven't decided that yet.
I think if this helps, I'm sure this was the final exclamation point you're looking for. But if it helps, I saw A New Hope when I was 6, and I turned out okay.
Okay. Well, that gives me a new hope.
There you go. That's good.
We had the same thing because I have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they, of course, have seen them a million times. But then my son, my youngest, is 17 months old, so I think about this a lot. My wife's like, yeah, okay, whatever, it's Star Wars, that's fine. But I think when's the right time to introduce that? That might be a great topic for an entire show, actually.
Well, I think the answer for me is that the reason it was that the older guys like me think that it's important to see them as they were released is because we lived through that.
Yes.
Finding out Vader's his dad.
That's
but
right.
They all know that. Everybody knows that now. So I think that takes away the real argument to not showing them chronologically. I think it makes more sense just for them to understand what they're seeing if they see the story, you know, as it was supposedly imagined and not as it was filmed.
Sure.
And that way they, you know, and because, you know, my kids have already seen they've probably already seen and forgotten half the Clone Wars episodes because they're only 5.
Right.
So we're going to have to rewatch those in a couple of years. So,
yeah, I think I'm naive enough in thinking that I can keep Mason from knowing about the truth of Darth Vader and, you know, make it be like all the other things you're supposed to believe when you're a little kid.
Mm-hmm,
there,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I won't go any further, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's a very timely point at this time of year.
Indeed it is.
Yeah.
Indeed it is.
Speaking of the Life Day celebration.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. So we'll jump back into it. We could probably talk about all our families and kids forever and how it relates to Star Wars. And just there's just a lot of fun things there. We had a great time with James Arnold Taylor about that as well. But I want to jump back into Return of the Jedi really quickly. And I was curious as to your opinions of how Yoda handled the entire situation with how he instructed Luke Skywalker to face his father, confrontation versus more of an attacking perspective. How did you discern that, being a big fan as you are?
You know, there's all every boy has some issues with his dad. You know, I had perhaps more than a lot of kids, so it had more poignancy for me than a casual viewer might. So, you know, it's hard when you're a teenager and you see something like that to, you know, separate the sci-fi you're looking at versus the feelings that it brings out in you that are related to the real world. But it was powerful. I mean, that, no mistake about it. I mean, that the whole, you know, that, oh my gosh. I mean, you try to imagine, you know, someone like Luke feeling like he's been lied to, been misled. Does that call into question everything he's ever been taught by Yoda? I mean, it's just layers and layers of questions that came with that revelation.
Right. And that's just part of being a good parent, really. I mean, knowing when to disseminate the information and when to kind of hold on to it.
Well, you know, we're all like, you know, the way, whether or not to let our kids know whether Luke is really Darth Vader's son or not is just a sort of microscopic
that's right. That's
analogy
right.
for so many things in our lives, you know. Mm-hmm. At what point do we want our sons or daughters to realize that we're fallible human beings and not, you know, these omnipotent creatures?
As far as talking to Yoda here some more, you know, he has some classic lines that he has. And
all of his aphorisms.
Yes, exactly. So it comes to mind, like, what are the most maybe that impact you, or some that you kind of carry with you in your daily life?
Well, the one that I like just because of the irony of the physicality is, you know, judge me by my size, do you? Because I'm 6.5 feet tall, and Yoda's, you know, 3 feet tall at best. So it's to me, that's always funny that I've been for almost 20 years portraying a character that is, you know, child size compared to me. And it is, and it's just a ball to see people's reaction. Cause usually when they meet me, I'm sitting behind a table and I'm signing autographs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's an element of disbelief. And, you know, if you walk up to, you know, to Mark Hamill and you look at him, you know, he's Mark Hamill. So there's no moment of disbelief that's Mark Hamill. But when you walk up to me, and I'm sitting at a table and, you know, got a sign that says, this is the guy that does the voice of Yoda. And you're a, you know, a 9-year-old kid. There's an element of, this is crazy talk. So I always have to give a little, you know, judge me by my size, you know, something, you know, a Jedi Master UFO, Hercules' voice. Yes. So, you know, and then they light up like a Christmas tree. They're like, oh my gosh, that's really the guy. And then they want to get a picture. So that's the moment. And I stand up, and every time they're like, oh my gosh, Yoda's so big. You're so tall.
You're not a little short for a
stormtrooper. Yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, the fact that I'm a human doesn't
surprise
me. Right.
You're not green, yeah.
I'm a tall human. That's a shocker.
But, that's good.
Yeah, it's very, it's actually a lot of fun.
Full disclosure, when you jumped into Yoda's voice, I lit up like a Christmas tree too.
another green symbol, it is, yes.
And we love our symbols at Coffee with Kenobi for sure.
Yeah, actually, they've got a new, Hallmark has a new keepsake ornament out this year that's my voice in there, and it's motion activated. So when you hang it on your tree, as you walk by, the ornament will spout Yoda-isms at you.
Wow.
That's so fun. Yeah, we'll have to get those, Carl. Say, hey, Daddy just talked to Yoda.
Yeah.
We'll say, Whoa, okay. So before we let you go, it's been such a delight speaking with you, and which is no surprise. And so we have our five questions that we ask all of our guests to kind of find some commonality between all the Star Wars fans. So, Corey, I'll go ahead and let you ask the first one. Go right ahead.
Sure. Okay. Tom, your favorite Star Wars movie?
I'm going to go against most answers, and I actually like Episode 4, A New Hope. Most people seem to like Empire, but I'm more of a New Hope guy, just because to me it's always the first one, you know. So
very much so. Well, okay, this will be an interesting one. Who is your favorite character?
Honestly, Darth Vader. And I feel justified in that because he was my favorite character from the first time I saw the first movie. And then as it went through the years and it was revealed that it is in fact his story, or was up until we'll see Episode 7.
Yeah. Right.
But as far as all the Star Wars universe, we know it all revolved around that character. And I, of course, didn't know any of that when I first saw the movie. I just thought he was just such an imposing, scary, you know, amazing thing that I'm like, there's got to be some serious mojo here for these otherwise almost incomprehensibly powerful beings that treat this one guy like they're terrified of him. So, you know, for a teenage boy, you know, it's the reason boys like dinosaurs and girls like unicorns, maybe. And the boys always want to be the powerful, you know, everyone trembles when I walk onto the playground. Well, that's Darth Vader. So.
Oh, I love that.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Oh, man. I I still think it's not, I don't know if I can nail it down to one specific line, but I really like the Dagobah sequence with the cave and the training. I think that's very deep. And of course the battle with, you know, no Luke, I am your father, you know, that, you know, it doesn't get better than that. So yeah, sure. I got a bunch that I probably half a dozen that I could say are kind of equal.
Yeah, it's a tough question. I highly recommend a blog on StarWars.com by me about the cave that came out last month. I'll send it to you.
Oh, cool. I will read it.
So, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
Oh, man.
Breaking.
I'm not an actual collector, but I have, of course, over the years gotten a lot of stuff. You know what? Honestly, I think I've got a little section on my bookcase where I have just things that little kids have drawn. I think that's best.
I agree.
I also have a collector card of a C-3PO that is legendary that I can't discuss. So anyway, that's good.
Oh, cool. Yeah, well, maybe if we see it in at Celebration over a cup of coffee. Yeah.
Steve will tell you what it is. He knows.
Oh, very cool.
Awesome. I do want to add real quickly that, and I pretty much can almost guarantee you won't remember this, but either a year or two ago, I guess you were in the Illinois area, and you're doing a signing. And one of my students, unbeknownst to me, because I teach high school literature, he went and he got your autograph, and you addressed it to Coffee with Kenobi, and I still have it hanging up in my house.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's fun.
Now we know each other. I'll get you one with your real name on it. So.
Sounds perfect.
Sounds good.
So, Tom, our last question here. What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Well, I think just the basic that, you know, good guys usually win, hopefully. And don't give up.
That's right. Well said. Yeah, there's so many wonderful parables that are great for kids to learn to and to aspire to as they're enjoying the saga, too. So we appreciate that. Before we let you go, what projects can we look forward to from you in the near future that you're allowed to speak about, of course?
Well, I can't discuss. I mean, I'm hoping to show up in Rebels, but we'll see. We can't talk about any of that, but sure. That will happen eventually.
And you were the guy holding the red lightsaber in the new trailer.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was him, too. Yeah. Nice and tall.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah.
Now, he was the voiceover.
The Rebels is just, yeah, and I love the show. I mean, I went on my website at first because I was getting people criticizing. You know, I'm like, come on. They came out of the gate. Remember what people said about the first few episodes of Clone Wars? So, you know, take a breath and let them get three episodes out before you start yelling. So I think everybody's realized now it's a terrific show, and it's going to just get better and better. So
no doubt about that. And if listeners just want to say hello or get in touch with you, how can they do so?
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess just, you know, post to your site or there's a number of blogs I look at. I'm occasionally on the StarWars.com. They can send something to my website. Whatever they like to do.
Sure. Yeah, well, Tom, thank you so much for being on Coffee with Kenobi and sharing a cup of coffee with us. It was a real pleasure and a treat. And you as well, have a Merry Christmas and enjoy this great holiday season with your family.
Thank you. You do well.
Thanks. Bye, Tom.
And may the Force be with you. Always.
Thank you, my friend.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi. As well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torak on iTunes.
Give the evacuation code signal.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.